Welcome to the Impact Conversations, a Nijrode podcast. I am Brechtje Spijkerman.
And I am Janan Amelink. In this podcast series, we discover the stories behind the researchers and their work.
We believe that education and research at Nijrode serves a purpose in society, shaping responsible leaders.
We like to share what impact Nijrode research has made on society. Let's go.
Sustainability, Jan-Anne, which is your topic, basically. And we're going to talk with two very interesting people. And one of them
is André.
Was your teacher, André.
Yeah, so he taught a little bit. I think he should be more involved within the program, hint, hint.
Because
I mean, it's a key topic for us as a world to figure out how to do business sustainable and how to be good stewards of the planet. And that's basically what he's a professor in.
And I also wonder, Anke van Hall, the second guest, you haven't...
I don't know her. Do you know her?
No, but...
But we do know a little bit about her.
We know a little bit about her. She's Professor Sustainable Building at the Center for Entrepreneurship, Governance and Stewardship. And I wonder, because I read her impact case, she is also a very interesting person to guide you maybe in the program. But maybe there's some work to do for us.
There's a lot of
work. Let's convince them that they should teach.
Yeah, and let's discover more about what they're about.
Okay, let's go.
Let's go.
Okay, let's start with a really dramatic quote, Anke. After being a voice crying in the wilderness for years, people listen and ask for advice. This quote is about you being that voice. So please tell me more.
Oh yeah, that's nice. Yeah, that's a quote of Jos van Dalen. And he's working at the Ministry of National Affairs. And I know him for a long time. And he's now in charge of what's called the Natural Gas Free Neighborhoods program.
Yeah.
So, and I introduced the word the third success factor of renovations with high energy ambitions. And the third success factor is everything that's related with human behavior. And everybody's always focused on technology,
right?
On finances. And the third success factor is often neglected. And for a long time, I tried to ask for attention for this third success factor. And he knows that. And that's why he's nice. He came to that quote because... He thinks that at the moment, more and more people are listening. Not everyone, but much more than in the past.
So how come? Because it's really obvious that a big change has a huge behavioral component. How come that they didn't include your third success factor?
When you talk about energy efficiency, it has a lot to do with technology. And people who are working... in technology are focused on technology and finances most of the time. And there are a lot of human influences that are just not in the education. It's not part of their daily work.
Mm.
So it's very easy to neglect it. And we have kind of a, it's kind of funny, we have a reality game that we often play around the third success factor. And I start with the introduction of it and everybody says, yes, very important. And then we start to play that reality game and then people have to act like as a constructor of a municipality or a housing association, somebody from a housing association or a resident. And within half an hour, the residents are sitting by themselves and the professionals are talking with each other, even in that reality game. So it's so... fundamental that the focus is on technology and finances, that the people who are living in the houses that have to become energy efficient are often forgotten. And on paper, everything is okay, but in practice, it's...
But can you name a couple of those behavioral components to make it very lively
for us?
Yeah,
I can.
So it's about you and me. Living in our homes, right?
Yeah. Now, I think it's that for me, it was an eye opener a long time ago that when we talk about energy efficiency, we talk a lot about payback time. So you have to invest a certain amount of money in energy efficient measures, and after a certain amount of time, you have a long time, you have reduces on your energy bill. So at a certain point, you're equal, and after that, you start earning money. That's the idea. And I noticed, and my colleagues too, that in the business world, people responded to that or enthusiastic about that, but residents, it didn't work.
Mm.
And then I talked to a psychologist, and he said, "Yeah, but that's logical because people have loss aversion, and that's they for them it's much harder to invest than that they're happy with the earnings,
the current way of doing things."
Yeah, So, and he said, "There's also the fact that the longer it takes to get your reward, your financial reward, the less important it is for you." So, so the whole calculation that everybody uses is not working in the mind of people.
Yeah.
So it's there are a lot of emotional influences that makes that calculation totally different than it's in reality than it's on paper.
And so how do you then reframe it? Is it more than about doing good to the world, or like how do you change the narrative?
No, we used to work for a long time already with what we call the merger of interest strategy. And that's focused on the idea that a lot of people are a bit interested in sustainability. And there's only a few people who it's extremely important, but a few people who are not interested at all or don't believe the problems. But the whole group within the most of the people want to do something, but not if it has a negative impact on their short-term.
Negative impact being loss of money?
Loss of money, or it's inconvenient, or they want to spend their money on a new kitchen. Mm. And so it's not on top of them. Most people's not on top of their mind. And what we're trying to do is to make that connection so we focus first, what's on top of their mind? What's important for them? What's keeping them awake? What makes them happy? What's worrying them? And then we use our knowledge of sustainability to help them solve their problems, reach their goals. And so we make connections. Mm. And that's also the main idea of the third success factor. So, for example, I already told you about the natural gas-free neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of things in neighborhoods that are important for people. And we try to connect the fact that we have to make them energy efficient or the natural gas neutral,
mm-hmm.
with the things that really bother them. So are there bumps in the road? Are there dangerous places? Are people feeling lonely? So maybe we can create meetings around energy efficiency, or for example, learn them to cook on electricity. And by that doing that, they start knowing their neighbors and.
Right.
So we try to make that connection all the time with what's really important for people and the sustainability goals. And we're talking about third success factors, always about energy efficiency.
Oh, cool. André?
Yeah?
You dived into the topic of what blocks the transformation towards higher levels of sustainability within organizations. And you developed the sustainable market transformation model. Can you please explain?
Yeah. Just in a few sentences.
Or maybe we have 20 minutes for it.
Yeah, we wrote a whole book about it.
but it's very difficult then to explain in one or two words, right?
Yeah, but I guess the key points, they are quite easy to understand.
Okay.
Because when we talk about transformations, it's often about big transitions. Like the energy transition that we just talked about with Anke. It's big, it's about governments and companies and NGOs. So first of all, thinking big and acting small is a key ingredient to make it practical. Because indeed, we need to understand that we are in the middle of huge transformations. But change always starts with a few group of just a few people who are committed to make a change. So we try to analyze how this is happening in practice. Mm-hmm. And that's indeed how we came to this book about, step by step or wave by wave, mm-hmm. going towards higher levels of sustainability.
How do you get people to act small? Because often these problems can seem so overwhelming that it's like, where do I start? Yeah. And I might as well not.
Yeah, first of all, it's also once when you get a feeling that you're kind of this atlas figure, this person carrying the whole world on his or her shoulders. If you get that feeling as a professional, you're making it too big. So first of all, you just also personally thinking about this and also reassuring them. No, if you make it big, you cannot make a difference. But when you make it small, that's how you can start to change something in reality. And the next, it's also trusting more kind of a ripple effect that if you do this, then clients can react, customers or suppliers can react.
So it's the same basically. It's also a behavioral and psychological component to it.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's a huge part of the transformation.
That's why we work so much together.
But I think it's also important to not only look at it from one discipline, for example, finance or technology. No, if you want to understand change in reality, you need to include all these different disciplines, all these different reasons why people change.
It's very recognizable for me in my work. So I work with organizations to change them and to guide them with change. And if the steps are too big, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So these little small steps, can you give a small example?
There are plenty. And, but for example, Sascha Steinfeld, he was a participant in CSR in Action. And he entered the course saying, well, I would love to work more on sustainability, but I have no background in it.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, okay, interesting. This course is also about bringing and learning. So if you only learn, you are not part of the whole group. So why can't you reach out to an organization and see how you can embed your learnings in that organization? And in his case, that was the company Improba, famous for the ketchups and the other products they have. This was 7 years ago, and he's still working as a sustainability manager for that company. So maybe a small act, but at the same time, I know what kind of difference it made for his life personally, the impact on the organization. And furthermore, for the whole value chain, you see a lot of consequences.
And that also has the action-inquired methodology involved. So what kind of action do you want people to take?
Actions close to their personal sphere of influence. So it's not about theorizing about actions you would like to take. No, think about the actions that you already took in the past or embed your learnings in your own practice. And reflect on it, what works. You often have certain expectations. If I do this, then my employees will be involved or my clients or other stakeholders. Is that actually happening?
Wow. But do you imply that on yourself as well? So what are your small steps?
Yeah. One small step is the coffee cup I have over here.
And the reusable mask.
A face mask, indeed. And there's a funny story linked to this cup, also linked to behavioral change, because I could have done this already for years. It started about 4 years ago, I guess, triggered by the Dutch Royal Rail System. And they implemented a new policy saying that if you're buying your cup of coffee at the railway station, you get a discount of 25 cents if you bring your own cup. And well, I don't really care about the 25 cents, but I like the principle. So from that day on, I have my cup of coffee. And once when you have it, why only use it at the railway station?
It's a really nice example on how big organizations such as the Dutch railway station change their policy.
Mm.
And it's a small step.
Yeah.
But it's indicative on how you should maybe behave, right?
Exactly.
So it's a behavioral change.
Yeah. Maybe what's nice to emphasize is that you always ask people to focus on things that they really already enthusiastic by themselves are about by themselves, and I think that's also something that we have in common, because the third success factor, we have the metaphor of the part of the brain that lightens up when you're in an MRI scan and you see something that you really like.
Yeah,
and our dream is that sustainability or certain sustainability measures or
results
or results are things that lightens up that part of the brain. So if you have that internal enthusiasm, then it's a strong engine to get results.
So, and what is it for you? What lights up in your scan?
Oh, at the moment, I lived 2 years in Toronto, so in the center of the city, and now I moved to the Veluwe. So I have to say, when I lived in Canada, every weekend we went into nature, and it was with the real nature.
So
this is the real nature in the Netherlands, and I'm totally obsessed. It's maybe too strong word, but I'm with biodiversity and natural life. So I'm now part of the what's called the Herenboeren. Mm-hmm. That's, I don't know if you know that, it's cooperative farm. And with a lot of people, we own that farm, and I'm one of the guides to get to
the guys or the guides.
They're also guys.
I'm just one of the guys
getting introducing people. But I really like that idea of circular economy on a natural in natural circumstances in a farm, being aware of. How important, how difficult it is to create all the stuff that are in the shops.
Yeah.
So it totally changes your thinking about food, about almost everything. And I think that's the thing that really keeps me busy at the moment.
Yeah, that's a beautiful example. Yeah. There are no grizzlies, but wolves now on the Veluwe.
Yeah, and a lot of... how do you call those big pigs that live?
Everzwijnen?
Yeah, because they're kind of hungry at the moment. It's a very bad season for them. So we surround it now by
and they make those, lots those of animals. Noises.
Yeah, noises and also sometimes a bit dangerous. So you have to be aware that they're walking around.
Yeah, right. Especially with your dog.
Yeah.
André, how to deal with resistance when it comes to focusing on more sustainability?
Well, my main way how to deal with it is don't blame the players, blame the game. Hmm. If you feel resistance in the sense that other people don't understand it and you get anxious about it, keep that phrase in your mind, because then it's not resistance that somebody is against sustainability, for example. No, there are certain rules of the game why it doesn't fit for that other person. So zooming out, trying to understand the current situation, and from there, well, seeing how we can change the rules of the game. That's how I try to overcome resistance.
Really nice, because it will last longer if you follow your advice, and then you not get easily frustrated, because on a global scale, there's a big change now in awareness. It's like finally, globally, people are more aware of why sustainability is so important. Where did you see that change? Moment in time?
Yeah, especially notice that basically the question in relation to sustainability changed. Because I'm working here now for 13 years. In the beginning, it was much more about what is sustainability and why is it important? And we don't have to discuss about these questions anymore. Now it's much more about the how question.
Right.
And that's really for the last two, three years. But also looking at Anke, I really noticed that there's a lot of momentum to, whether you're a public organization or a private organization, is how question really has a lot of momentum.
So it changes kind of from why to how.
In this next part of the podcast, Jan-Anne is out and about doing interviews on location. Let's go now to a special segment where we dive deeper into the work of the researchers.
So today I am joined by Marianne van Cape. Is it Cape or Keep? Because we're in
no,
English.
No, Cape.
Yes. Dutch origins. she is the CSR Corporate Social Responsibility Manager of the Year of 2020 and 21.
Yes.
Well, translated it kind of. And as Chief Sustainability Officer at Verstegen Spices and Sauces, we're here to talk about CSR in action. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for having me here.
Thanks. So to start off, what's your favorite spice?
Oh, what's my favorite spice? I love cardamom. Do you know cardamom?
I have no clue. So what is it?
Well, it's a something that we don't use that much in our European dishes. It's more, well, it's pretty exotic. So that's one of the things that I like.
Where does it grow?
It grows in India and in Guatemala. It's a big plant. And the cardamom itself is the food of the plant. And it's been used a lot in sweet dishes.
So like sweet curries, or what do I need to think about? Or like sweet?
Like sweet, yeah. Yeah. If you like things like wheel Arabic kind of pastry, yeah. There's a lot of cardamom in it. It's a really special kind of
That's
spice.
Great. I'll have to go out and buy that.
Yes, definitely.
For sure.
Yes.
And so today we talk about CSR in action. And so what kind of action were you guys at Versteeg inspired to take?
Action? What kind of action? You mean CSR kind of action? Oh, yeah, well.
I assume there's a lot going on.
Yeah, so. There's so much going on. You know, when you talk about CSR, it's a lot. And we as a family business, we find it pretty difficult to make choices. So what we're busy at the moment is, of course, climate, because everything stands and falls with climate. Being a company in the food industry, nature, of course, is a condition of all our products. Without nature, everything, food will be tasteless without spices. So,
sure. So
climate is really, really important for us.
And so what do you guys do exactly to combat, I guess, climate change?
Well, we do a lot.
Yeah.
And one of the things which I'm most pleased with is our agroforestry programs. And to explain you a little bit about that, because you're looking at agroforestry.
Yeah, I'm like, what is that? Please tell me more.
Well, it's the opposite from monoculture. You know, here in Holland, we have, of course, a lot of farmers. We are the second largest food exporter of the world, which is pretty special for such a small country. And why are we so big? Because a long time ago, we decided to go for monoculture. You know that when you drive through Holland, big pieces of land
with the same thing.
Same thing. Doing so, we create big problems. Problems with the water, with the bottom, with the soil, problems with insects, problems with biodiversity, many problems. And agroforestry is the opposite. It's about that you combine different produce, different products, different green plants, that instead of going against each other, they help each other. To explain, for example, you can plant in one piece of land something that is good for the soil, something that attracts birds and insects, something that keeps out certain insects, something that gives shade, and something that, well, so you can make
You diversify it in that way.
Exactly.
They take care of
exactly.
each other. It reminds me of, I don't know if you've read it, The Hidden Life of Trees.
No, that sounds exciting.
Yeah, basically he argues the same for the forest, it's also changing to a monoculture.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry, go for it.
No, well, that's it. So it's about biodiversity. It's about working against deforestation. But also the nice thing about it is that the farmer, he lowers the risks of the product. You can imagine that if you have one product and something happens, for example, climate change, and the harvest is going bad, then he doesn't have any income, or she, it's often women farmers. And by promoting agroforestry, you make that there are different products that he can harvest, some products that he can harvest for own use, some products that he go sell on the market, and often also products that can be harvested at different times in the year.
So you have multiple incomes instead of
exactly.
one at a time.
Exactly. So that makes us really, really happy.
That's great. And so, because this is the Nijrode impact case, what is something that you gathered from Nijrode that you were like, hey, this impacted the way I do business?
Well, you know that I joined here the CSR expedition a long time ago. And one of the things that I liked most about it was, of course, working together, because realizing creating impact is always about cooperation. And especially at Nijrode, the way that you can talk with people from different points of view in society, privately, but also in business, like, really helps you. And because I told you that I love working in a production company, and especially food. But then the things that happen in a complete different companies, like banking or the authorities,
it can still influence your way of thinking.
Yes, and that's what really made it really special for me.
I guess we're seeing a common thread here, because it's diversity in terms of where you're planting, diversity in terms of who you meet here.
Exactly.
And so I have another question, which is, you're also chair of, I don't know how to pronounce it, but AITRA?
AITRA, oh my God, and so where did you find that?
It's on your LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah.
but what I'm curious about is, because they stimulate women entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And so what is the overlap between women in the workforce and in business and sustainability and CSR in action? What's the overlap there?
Oh, you know how to find your nice questions.
Thanks. That's what I'm here for.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, it's difficult to get some. You cannot say it's like that always. But maybe it's because women have the tendency to have a longer horizon than men. So decisions that are being taken by women are much more into the future. And I know that by saying this, there are many men who will say, oh yes, but I'm also into long-term
thinking.
And I really see that. But I see also that women are often the ones who make the thing going like that.
Who make the wise decisions and have that view.
Yeah, well, you are saying it. Yes, maybe it's because...
I guess I can say it. No, you can say it, of course, as well.
Yeah, maybe it's that, yeah.
That's brilliant. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming here. Is there any question I forgot to ask?
Oh, but we just had 5 minutes and I can talk for hours about this. So maybe another time. But no, that's a really good question. Thank you very much.
Thanks. We'd love to have you back. Today we're here with Jos van Dalen. Welcome, Jos.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So you're director for Natural Gas Free Neighborhoods, right?
Right.
We were discussing what's the English translation.
Yes, I guess this is the right one.
Yes. So tell me, what do you guys do?
I have to go back to the climate agreement 3 years ago. The climate agreement, based on the Paris Agreement, this government said we have new goals in 2050 and 2030. And we can only achieve these goals if we change our approach, not only with regulations and with subsidies, but also with an approach in the neighborhoods, in the cities themselves.
It has to also be local.
Yeah, local, on the direction of the municipalities. That was an approach that is firmly written down. And at the same time, everyone said, okay, let's do that. But how do we do that? Because in all those cities, there live people under different circumstances. They all have to, in the end...
They have different challenges.
They have different challenges. But in the end, every home, every factory, every office have to become natural gas free. And that's a big step. And the investors is not the government themselves, it's all the owners of the properties.
Yeah, because they have to invest.
They have to invest themselves. And there are a lot of people who don't have the money to invest. So there are a lot of challenges how to do that. And 3 years ago, it was decided first to start a learning program. That is this program. Mm-hmm. It's a learning program for the municipalities and all their stakeholders involved in this challenge, that at the end they can do it themselves. But we decided that it's a wise thing to do first to ask different municipalities which one will be an experiment is not the right word, because it's in the real world, but we'll try to become already natural gas free.
Yeah. And to find what the best methods
exactly,
are.
Exactly. And we started that 3 years ago. We have already had three rounds. We expect to have next year about 60 of those real scale experiments to learn how to scale up this process to the numbers that we really want.
And what's one of the key things you guys learn that you'll implement?
I guess that the key thing is you have to learn on all the different topics that that are relevant. And that is technical, that is financial, we work together with Anke van Hal of the Nijenrode.
That was going to be my next question.
The most important thing is the cooperation with the civilians in the neighborhoods. How can you do that? And not only that their approach is acceptable for them, but they have to really
buy into it,
participate. Yeah. Yes, and that's and how do you do that with all the different neighborhoods in the Netherlands, in the villages, in the big cities, all kinds of people, some who don't who have nothing with sustainability, have other worries in their lives. Eh?
Yeah, for sure.
This that's one of our main topics, and also. What I find particularly interesting is in those neighborhoods, it's not only the sustainability goals that we want to achieve, but there are many different goals.
Such as?
Social goals, or...
to bring the neighborhood more together, or...
Yeah, absolutely. There's unemployment in some neighborhoods in the big cities. Can you get the people who are unemployed also involved in this process? There's a lot of work to be done.
That's really cool. Yeah, I love that.
And in those experiments, we also study also together with for instance, schools and universities, how can we organize that process? And how can we involve the people in the neighborhoods at a way that it's more than acceptable, that at the end, I hope they say at the end, okay,
this was a success.
This was worthwhile doing, because not only is that I'm gas free. Okay, what about that's not a big deal, but also my neighborhood has become a little better, for instance.
Yeah, because you want to make it visible, or like
you want to make it visible. Yeah. It is not only the head, but also that people feel that it's not just it's what the government. Determines for them.
Yeah, it's an internal change within the community.
Right, and that's what we try to learn in practice, really. And also, it is not only just learning by doing, and let's wait and see. But also, that's why we talk a lot about with also universities and how can we organize this process. It is a learning program, and. This is also my first time that I do a learning program.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for us, that's the world.
It's quite difficult. It's quite new. Yeah, so we have all the people, also the people from the universities, the professors who
give their input.
Who give their inputs and cooperation with us to get the maximum effect that we can be successful in the end.
That's great. And lastly, what got you into this project in the first place? Why are you passionate about natural gas-free neighborhoods?
It could have been a different subject, I guess. But the most valuable thing is it's one of the big challenges for the climate challenges. But it's not academical. I like to work on challenges. From theory to practice.
Yeah, the impact in real life.
Yeah, the impact in real life. Really see how can we get that change, and what should we do also in politics and policy to change certain things that in the real world something happens that it really gets going.
I love that. Thanks so much for your time, and I hope to see you soon.
Okay. Thank you very much for this conversation.
So far for our interview on location. Thanks for having us. And now we'll continue with our main interview, back to the table and back to the impact conversation.
And one thing I'm really curious about is because you have there's a big discussion, like how much should the government do? How much is the responsibility there for companies? And we have here two people who are both either and in government and in within the company world. How do you guys see that balance?
I think everybody can do something, but you really have to see it and you have to want it. I think that goes for everyone. It's also for the politics as it is for businesses, as it is for individuals. And I was talking about that resistance. We had that merger of interest approach, and I came in touch with a theory from two people from Groningen who are from social studies, and they have the goal framing theory. And
the goal framing?
It's called goal framing theory. And what they say, and I make it very simple, I think they will blame me if they hear it, but they say...
we won't tell.
they say everybody has three mirrors, three classes. So first thing, everybody looks what's in it for me? What's my short-term benefit? Everybody looks at the second one, everybody looks at the financial part. But the third thing is that everybody wants to do good. That's a very fundamental personal thing. But it's complex that the what's in it for me part is in a more older part of your brain, so that makes it that's always leading.
Yeah.
And so talking about resistance pops up if you're asked to do good and it's against your personal benefits, your short-term benefit, and then you start to say there is not a problem. You say there's no climate problem, because then you don't have to feel guilty, or you say it's nothing that I have to do because the government has to do it first, or the companies have to do it first, or you say it doesn't have any influence. Talking about myself, like I said, I used to live in Toronto, but my children were living in the Netherlands already at a certain point of time, so I flew a lot, and I hear myself say the plane is going anyway, so why should because it was the friction was too strong.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to it was a long story, but it was about resistance. But also, if you want to, there was your question again. So, who should do it? If you're able to combine that's what's in it for me with that doing good, then there are two forces that drives people, and then it should be easy to get it done. So that's why we try to focus on that, always on that combination. So why you're supposed to take a topic that's really on your mind, that's really something that you think is important. And if you can start a fire burning in everyone, even if it's a small, very small step, then a lot of things can change. So that's what I'm convinced of.
Because that reminds me of an article actually André wrote with Ronald Jurensen about the glass ceiling of CSR. Could you talk a bit more about the importance of why we need to change sort of the narrative around CSR? Yeah. The idea of like, hey, it's often financially driven and it's financially beneficial, but why should the core foundation be something else? Because that's kind of what you're arguing.
Yeah. And it builds upon the point that Anke just made, because it's also about framing or the narrative that you talk about. Because what we also argue in this article is that for many organizations and also for people within organizations, if you frame sustainability as a trade-off between profits versus sustainability, you always find excuses that you say, well, I would love to be more sustainable, but indeed. And then all the short-term arguments pop up. But why does there have to be a trade-off between profit and sustainability? Can it be combined? But that's starting from a different starting point. Then you go above the glass ceiling. And then the starting point is, well, in the long term, we need to make sure that, for example, climate change is staying within certain limits. That's not self-interest, that's a common interest.
Mm-hmm.
If you take that as a starting point, you don't frame it as profit versus sustainability. But then the question is, how can we step by step move towards that common purpose that we have? And if we as companies do this and the government is doing this and NGOs do that, well, then we are creating a transformation. So indeed, the way how you think about sustainability really determines whether you stay below the glass ceiling and only pick up those.
So there needs to be a win-win.
It's not just about win-win in the here and now. It's about a common interest in the future. Mm-hmm. If that's your starting point, you can see, okay, what can we do now? How can others move as well? And in the end, it can be a win-win.
And do you see, are there any type of organizations that can easily go with this flow, with this thought?
Definitely. And maybe a practical example. I've been in Bangladesh a couple of times, also to do research in the textile industry.
You went by bike, right?
Then I would probably still be traveling.
Well, that plane was going anyway.
But I went there also to understand what really happens in a country like Bangladesh, mm-hmm. because they have about 5,000 textile factories.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are below the glass ceiling, meaning that they frame, well, it's either about profits or sustainability. And I noticed that indeed for some companies that I visited, indeed it really was about this trade-off. But I also noticed that you had other textile factories who can produce textile for similar cost price, where you saw people who were happy, the employees were happy and felt respected. Also the quality was very good. So I asked them, what is the difference? And the owner said, well, we are not discussing with our clients how we can reduce our cost price for the next order with, 1.0%. We are discussing about the textile they would like to sell in 3 years' time. And if that's what they want, okay, how can we invest together towards, that kind of production? But it really starts with a different relationship. And in the end, you have to win-win. Mm. It starts with a commitment that you have a common future together.
Wow, it's very, very challenging talking about the textile industry in Bangladesh, because how do you transform a business where the money is important and an economy that thrives on businesses like this? Isn't it like a rich country privilege to talk about sustainability?
No, that was also my learning points in the airplane back home. Then because I went there,
could you mention it? You get lots of thoughts in that airplane, right?
Exactly. But when I went to Bangladesh for the first time, I had the impression, well, it's probably, if you want cheap textile, you have to compromise on sustainability. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that one of the biggest companies in Bangladesh is DBL. And they were implementing all these sustainability principles. And at the same time, clients were lining up to buy their textile.
And it's a business owned by
Mr. Mohammed, a Bangladeshi person.
Oh.
So in the plane back, I realized it's a management choice. If you are paying attention to sustainability, you can create a good business, including these sustainability topics. But there's also a lot of money to earn without these kind of principles. But then you stay below the glass ceiling.
But very interesting.
And you talk about the idea of the question that they're asking to their suppliers is what kind of fabrics would you like to create in 3 years' time?
Yeah.
So it also changes the questions that you ask. Are there any questions that companies can ask themselves to change their way of thinking?
Yeah, I think if they start talking about the interest of all stakeholders and take that as a starting point, then it's so much easier to come to a sustainable solution. But normally we take the finance as a starting point, or we have take the building industry, but it's almost everywhere. You have a list of demands. You start to make a plan. You start your calculation. And then you see that you don't have enough money and you start to quit some of your wishes and demands because to make it equal. And that's how it works. And then it's hard to make it sustainable. Hmm. But if you say, okay, what are the interests of the stakeholders and also the environment and sustainability goals? And then you start looking for solutions that make that create a merger of interest and that ask for creativity. But if you start from that other start, if you have that other starting point, it's easier to come to a different result.
Yeah.
And then you create the win-win that you're talking about. And if you have win-win, then you have a certain drive to make it financial possible. You're a student. Students don't have much money, but they all have iPhones and Apple computers. And they're also very cheap phones and cheap computers, but they don't have them. They really want to have that. And they try to find a way to get them financed. and that greed or that the hunger to that because it's you really want it. That's what makes it possible to become sustainable. But you really have to keep in mind that what the interests of all the people involved are, and it asks creativity. But then you come almost always to more sustainable solutions than when you start with the finances in mind.
So, if I heard correctly, an advice for organizations who want to be more sustainable is to not start at the end of the process, but as soon as you're designing your process or your product, start talking about sustainable instead of sustainability.
No, start with the interest of the people in mind who have to make those choices. Coming back to that natural gas-free neighborhoods, for example, we have all kind of programs now, and it starts with an area level, and then it goes municipality level. Then first you make plans on a big level, then you go to your municipality, and then on the neighborhood, and then you go to the people, residents, and ask them to agree with it.
Yeah,
and that doesn't work normally because people are really annoyed if you come up with a plan about their houses that they have to invest in,
right,
and the municipalities has thought about something without asking you what your ideas are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you started totally at the other end, so mm-hmm. you start asking in a neighborhood, what's going on here? What are the problems? What is on your mind? What can be improved? What do you really like in this mm-hmm. neighborhood? And based on that information, you start to make your neighborhood plan, then you start to make your municipality plan, and then the larger scale plan. Then if you then ask the people to agree, mm-hmm.
makes a lot of sense.
They will do that because their interests were involved in the whole planning. And we also say, and a lot of people say, okay, we can't do that because we don't have time. We have deadlines to make those plans.
Right.
So I was talking to a public about this whole discussion, and then somebody said, so, okay, we have to slow down in the beginning to speed up in the end. And that's exactly what's necessary if you want to create enthusiasm about sustainability. You have to be aware what's on the mind of people.
Right.
And if you only say, okay, it's important that we have to reduce the carbons, and then you have a totally different starting point. And when you say, okay, who are the people who can't sleep because of the high energy prices, mm-hmm. and what can we do to help them? And at the end, you have the same result, but it's totally different approach.
And you also get different solutions.
And you also get different solutions.
Now, what I really would love to know is the work that you did, how did it impact society?
Yeah, we were involved in a lot of projects.
Mm-hmm.
And what has the most impact is that we get it together. So, cooperation is really an important part, I think, talking about success of sustainability measures. And with a whole lot of people who thought that the third success factor was neglected, we came together and we started to create courses. We were involved in projects. We were talking about it. And so we ask attention for the third success factor.
Right.
And we had a lot of contact with the people who are in charge of those natural, really a difficult word, the natural gas-free neighborhoods. And at a certain point, they decided they have a lot of money for pilot projects, that including the third success factor was one of the things you have to do to get that money. And that was really, I think, the most impactful. But it took a long time to get there. But now it's a lot of people are talking about it. Also because it's related with their interest.
This is the time.
Yeah. So yeah, and if you want to become a pilot project, you have to show that you are really interested in making connections, what's on the mind of people.
Mm. Well, thank you. And André, can you elaborate on how your work impacted society?
Yeah, and then I'm thinking both about the educational activities and the research activities.
Right.
And for education, it's much more via people like Sascha Steinfeld that I talked about.
Right.
So people come to Nijrode, they learn about these topics and they implement it themselves.
Yeah.
So wonderful to see how it helps them to be more effective at what they already do. Research, from my point of view, is more about people have taken for granted assumptions. Mm-hmm. And research can help them to see things differently, to frame things differently.
Right.
One of the examples is that in our programs, we often heard that people said, yeah, I understand sustainability, but my clients are not interested in it. So as long as my client is not asking it, I cannot do anything. Okay, interesting. Let's do
some research.
Yeah, because we do see companies where there was no client asking for it, and still by now they are very successful because of sustainability.
Right.
For example, Tony Chocoloni. It started with a purpose, like Anke was talking about, that they are thinking about certain people, in this case, the employees working in a cocoa value chain. Mm. They want to do something about it. And by now, they are the biggest company in the cocoa retail sector. So many clients are buying it, but didn't start because of
beautiful
clients.
Story.
Yeah.
So also, maybe to add something, because it's very nice chocolate. It's mm-hmm. great chocolate. It's good taste. Yeah. And that's the combination again.
Yeah, because it's also, again, wanting something that people want. It's the like personal want and doing something good. So it matches those two elements that you're
describing.
And
purpose-driven.
Yeah, it's purpose-driven. And but it also means that you need to reframe how you see your clients. Because often also in teaching at Nijrode, we taught participants the client is king. This is more the client is an ally towards the common purpose that you're working towards. And once when you understand it by reading an article or because of the research outcomes, it also helps people to, to think differently about certain taken for granted assumptions.
You're co-creating.
Yeah.
Cool. And also interesting, based on your research, you figured out that those clients are interested to be part of the work of the product. So,
yeah, exactly. So they become an ally. And if the chocolate wouldn't taste well, probably it wouldn't have worked. So there are other factors as well. But the fact that you have this common purpose can also be a very solid foundation for a strong business.
Sounds good to me. So have you any questions?
I guess a little fun question to end it
fun
with.
Fun fact?
Yeah, is what is something like within sustainability or within CSR that you would like Nijrode to take action on further?
Oh, don't start talking
paper cups.
No. It's more, we often challenge organizations saying purpose is easy, commitment is hard.
Hmm.
So stating that you have a nice mission, that's not that difficult. And Nijrode has a wonderful mission from my point of view. Serving society by shaping responsible leaders, really something I believe in. But what is our commitment? And how do we show our commitment? That's where I would like to challenge Nijrode.
Yeah. Walk the talk. That should be nice. And I have to say, a lot of things are happening already. The whole food production changed already at Nijrode. So there are a lot of beautiful things going on. But
what would be a little step you would like to take with Nijrode?
It would be great if Nijrode should be a purpose-driven university. That our main goal is to have positive impact related to the Sustainable Development Goals. And based on that, we are a great educational company that changes the life of people. That would be great.
Amen to that.
Amen. That's a wonderful conclusion,
and thank you for the good question, Jan Anne. Really enjoyed this conversation, André and Anke. I think it's a wrap.
I think that's a wrap. Thanks so much for coming, guys.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, nice conversation. Thanks.
You're welcome.
And for the listener, don't forget to like and subscribe.